Welcome to Creature Wars, the show where zoologists get fighty.
Woo!
First, let's have a run through of the rules. There are three rounds. In each round, your creature will have to face a scenario and try and survive it. Contestants, if you feel your creature is not up to the task, you can turn over your wild card. You can only do this once in the competition. At the end of each round, your creature will be judged. The judge's rule is final.
And I'm the judge!
Okay, let's introduce our guests. This week we have biologically interesting and compact Emma Parkin.
Hello, I think that's quite a good description of me actually.
Emma, what creature will you be championing today?
Today I am representing the leafcutter ants.
Good lord.
That's a good one. Ooh.
Nice. Ooh. Okay. Our next guest is the extremely talented and funny Maren Hunsberger.
Oh, you flatter me, Catherine.
Maren, what creature are you championing today?
Today I've got the slow loris, an extremely interesting primate.
Okay, and finally we have cute and creepy.
Woohoo!
Lottie Bingham.
Yeah.
Lottie, what creature are you going to be championing today?
I am championing the axolotl, or the Mexican walking fish.
Okay, let's go on to our first scenario. Scenario: a honey badger is looking at you angrily.
Uh-oh.
How will you survive the encounter?
God.
Oof. And we'll go to Lottie first.
Thank how
will
you
the
ax-
how will an axolotl with its pathetic neotenous state?
No, so you say pathetic, this. But that is actually, I would say, how it will, it's a defense mechanism because of its youthful look, sort of little adorable baby, essentially. So for those who don't know, basically the axolotl doesn't undergo like physical changes into like a normal, it doesn't metamorphose, and so remains in a sort of larval state even when it's sexually mature, so it looks like a baby animal when it's old.
I wish we could all do that, to be honest, like looking way younger.
I'm not sure, that's kind of creepy.
Well, I don't know, cute and creepy? Or?
Yeah. Anyway, so I think he would sort of look really sweet, and the badger then wouldn't want to attack. So either lull him into a false sense of security and then have a go, or just fend him off entirely. But should the badger still choose to attack, he can just drop limbs willy-nilly and piss off.
Willy-nilly.
Yeah, willy-nilly.
Dropping limbs willy-nilly.
And then they'll just regrow, no problem. So really,
see, that
not
would
much
be
a threat.
Very useful.
Very useful.
In real life.
But in real life, what are you planning being attacked by honey badgers?
Just in case.
Could be handy on the tube.
Oh, yes.
No, you'd permanently be just losing limbs left and centre. You'd just be a torso forever.
My arms are Trafalgar, my legs are Piccadilly.
So, yeah, that's, I think, pretty strong case for the axolotl there.
Okay, so it's gonna be cute,
mm-hmm,
and try and lull the honey badger into thinking, oh, it's just a baby, shouldn't
yeah,
attack.
Yeah, because by nature we are designed to not want to attack any form of baby, aren't we? We're designed to want to protect them.
Humans are.
Do you think honey badgers are as empathetically evolved?
Probably not as, but I would say to a certain extent, for sure. I mean, they still have their own babies.
My other question is, they are amphibious, aren't they? Am I right in thinking they're amphibious, the axolotl, or are they?
Yes, it's an amphibian. Yes.
That would make sense why they're in the same environment.
Okay, all right, that was a good argument. Thanks, Lottie. Maren, do you have a strategy for facing down or running away from the honey badger?
I do, I have several, actually. So the slow loris, as one can tell in the name, is by nature a very slow animal. So it's not going to run away in any sense or fashion. It moves, it's very sloth-like in its movement. So picture that kind of like, is it going to go there? No, is it going to go there? No. But it is also very adorable. And because it's so slow, it lives in a tree. So it's very hard to spot. So I'm hoping the slow loris will be able to escape the honey badger's wrath by simply hiding away from it up high.
Can honey badgers climb trees?
I was just about to ask that. You know, they can do almost anything else, so I wouldn't be surprised, but I, you know, have my fingers crossed for the
I have a
the,
feeling
the poor
that
baby
they can't.
Slow loris.
I don't know. We'll perhaps fact they check that one.
That,
they
that's
don't
one
look
we should
like
check.
They can.
Right? They look like a ground animal, yeah, a scurrier.
But then if you think about it, there's those goats that can like stand Ooh. Horizontal on the cliffs and they don't really look like they can do it.
They
so
are awesome.
They can surprise you.
I'm worried about that. But so
you're
if,
worried about
it. For the slow loris, on behalf of the slow loris.
Yeah.
But if there, a confrontation were to occur, the slow loris is the only venomous primate in the world.
What?
Wow. Which is extremely exciting. So, venomous is a little bit of a misnomer because that usually means like an injection of a poison, like as in a snake. And what the slow loris really does is lick this brachial gland on its elbow that contains a toxin that they use for a whole bunch of things, including communication. But when it licks it, it can then have it in its mouth when it bites you. And it's either toxic to some humans or it will cause you to go into anaphylactic shock. So I'm hoping that would take down a honey badger at least temporarily.
What if the slow loris swallows the poison?
They're immune to it. They really? Also lick it into their own fur and the fur of their young, so that anything, if anything were to bite them, it would get in that thing's mouth.
I have confirmed that honey badgers can, in fact, climb trees.
Oh, shit. All right, well.
But they're kind of camouflaged, aren't they? Like, aren't they, like, the colour?
They're really hard to find. Yeah.
What, honey badgers?
No, slow lorises,
yeah, and they're nocturnal. So.
Wait, but how are they... Surely they're not camouflaged at all times. They're not a chameleon.
No, but they just almost never move.
Am I right in thinking they're the ones with the algae in their fur that turn them green?
No, that's sloths.
Oh, never mind.
Okay, all right, Emma. Oh. How are you going to face down the honey badger?
Okay, so leafcutter ants are pretty cool. They live in eusocial colonies that spread really far. If you ever went to the Creepy Crawlies exhibit at the Natural History Museum when the leaf ant cutter colony was still there, you could have seen them in their ways of tending fungus gardens. However, this won't help very much in this. So the situation would be that in the leafcutter colonies, they have different morphs, they have distinct castes, and they have a really aggressive caste called a soldier ant, which has like a huge head by comparison to the rest of its body, and they defend the colony from predators. So what would happen is all the soldier ants of the colony, and they live in like thousand strong colonies, would band together to somewhat kind of take down the honey badger in a kind of a bit of a Nicolas Cage, not the bees situation, where they kind of overrule the honey badger and kind of just basically bite him to death.
You know, honestly, out of all three of us, I really do think the leafcutter ants stand the best chance.
Do you not think the honey badger could literally just step on you and that's that?
Probably, but the thing is there are so many of them. If they just kept coming.
Right, so I guess we've got to define, are we talking about pack or individual?
True.
Okay, well, if we're talking about individual leafcutter ants, I mean, they're still quite cool in that they can lift 50 times their own body weight.
Wow.
So it'd be like the equivalent of me lifting a medium to large van on a daily basis, just like casually being like, look, I can lift this. So they're kind of the Superman of the ant world and the animal world. So they could still do a pretty good job on their own, enough to get the colony away to safety, but they're better together.
Okay, so I think it was a valiant attempt by the axolotl. You are cute.
Really cute.
Really cute. I don't think the slow loris has got a lot of chance.
No.
But I do think that it's nice that it will probably at least give the honey badger a tummy ache after it's been eaten.
Hopefully.
So I think it's going to have to be... It's going to have to be the leafcutter ant, because I feel like they would act in a group. They wouldn't act individually.
And they could.
And even if they did act individually, they'd probably just climb on the honey badger's back and not be...
It
wouldn't be able to get hold of it anyway.
Could just live in the fur.
I don't like how supportive Marin is of Emma's animal. Do you understand the concept of this game?
I'm just so excited for the leafcutter ants. I need to see the honey badger taken down. And so I'm on
We have a common enemy.
It's the new politics. So, well done. Leafcutter ant is the winner.
Yay.
And that's the end of that scenario. And on to the next scenario. Ooh, scenario. In a dystopian plot twist, you and your fellow creatures have been placed in separate cages. Luckily, you have a cunning escape plan. But how will you communicate it to your comrades?
Can I ask which kind of dystopian plot twist does this relate to?
Well...
It sounds something like Saw.
I guess so.
I'd say... It doesn't really matter, but if you think of the history of the Earth, if you think of at least human history, most of it has been a dystopian plot twist.
Okay.
All the bits that get reported on the news are. So you can imagine any of those, I don't mind.
So we're stuck in separate containers, in separate
You're
cages.
You're in separate cages. So each leafcutter ant is in a separate cage.
Ooh,
each
individual.
Slow loris is in a separate cage. And each of our poor, cute, creepy axolotls are in separate cages.
I've done rather well, actually, to choose the axolotl with my cute, creepy...
In all honesty, where is going to be space for each individual leafcutter ant to have a separate cage?
That's a big room.
Very little cages.
Okay, okay, wait, so are we communicating with the other creatures that we're up against?
Yeah. No, with your own kind.
Do you want to save your own kind?
See, okay, now this is actually not very dystopian for the slow loris because they are widely trafficked in the illegal exotic pet trade.
Aww.
Which is very sad. So.
So it is dystopian, but it's just not a plot twist.
But it's just real life.
Why don't you go first then, Maren?
Okay, thank you. So slow lorises, they look very expressive because their eyes are huge. They're like, they're basically the size of tennis balls. They're gigantic. They're like twice as big as their head. Look them up, it's amazing.
Is there a reason for that?
Well, because they're nocturnal, so they have gigantic eyes to be able to see in the nighttime. But that's really just like a human projection of emotion, because their faces and their bodies don't give a lot away about what they're trying to say to each other. They don't do a lot of gesturing or facial manipulation. Yeah, like some other primates do, like chimps and gorillas and things. But the way that they primarily communicate is through like clicks and whistles and ultrasonic vocalizations, which we would not be able to hear, but other slow lorises can, which is funny because they don't like have visible ears.
So they have a way of secretly communicating without any of their captors even knowing.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think this would be extra handy because all of these things would be undetectable to most humans, including, like I mentioned before, their toxic gland secretions, which sounds very unappealing, but which we can't smell, but other slow lorises would be able to tell because they secrete hormones in that as well. And so depending on how they're feeling, stressed, if they're in estrus, things like that, their secretions will smell different, so other slow lorises will be able to tell.
How long-ranging are these vocalized communications, by the way?
That's a great question.
And what are there, how many varieties of it are there?
And well, can I get through glass?
Is it just one noise?
Mm.
Oh, but did we say the cage was glass?
Well, no, but I'm assuming there's some kind of tough material. What are the cages?
It could just be bars.
Could be bars.
Could be bars. If it's bars, I think we'd stand a really good chance. And also, they're like 15 different kinds of slow loris. Like, there are lots of different kinds. So I imagine the vocalizations are slightly different based on what species you
are. Probably pretty specific to species.
Mm. Yeah, exactly.
I think those are some good strategies. Yeah, communication by smell and by ultrasonic sounds. Yeah,
that's good.
What if too many slow lorises in the same place is too smelly that people decide to move you further apart?
Mm. Excellent question. See, I don't know if we can smell it. I don't think we can.
So human beings potentially can't smell it. I'm presuming that human beings are probably the aggressors in this situation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Unless the apes have risen and taken the earth, which is possible.
Could be. All right, Lottie, how is the axolotl going to communicate its escape plans to the other axolotls?
As far as I know, there are no useful sounds they make. But, so the male, in order to attract his female, does this lovely little courtship dance, which I think he could employ, particularly, like you're saying, if it's a glass cage or whatever, and sound, even this wonderful ultrasonic sound or whatever it is, can't get through. These dance moves could be seen communicating, not just, hey, come at me, girl, but something cleverer.
Is the dancing style like Step Up, or is it like Michael Jackson?
Disco, you know,
I think they're really multi-talented, and they can throw out anything.
Multi-genre.
Yeah, a little bit of Big Fish, Little Fish. Oh, Big Fish.
Hey.
Little Fish.
Yeah.
Even though they're not fish, sorry, to be very clear, they are amphibians. And I also think, although slightly unusual, again along the courtship route, when they are, basically the males deposit cone-shaped packets of sperm, spermatophores.
How compact?
It's interesting, I don't really know the reasoning for why it has to be cone-shaped.
Is that deposited, like, inside the female, or is it just there and she can just sit on it?
So it's pretty much that. So basically they deposit it onto a sort of substrate, and then the female's cloaca.
Like a chicken, yeah?
Maybe. You're asking too much of me. Anyway, basically it's an opening which can be used for sexual, urinary or alimentary uses. So their cloaca then takes up said spermatophores, fertilises the eggs, and then She releases them and they incubate for 2 to 3 weeks. Okay. But that's not the point.
Yeah,
sorry.
I was going to say, that's a little bit of a diversion.
Yeah, sorry.
But so,
so the point is they could use the spermatophores as a sort of, they could perhaps lay them in specific areas within their cage to be like, turn left, then right, then pause.
Oh.
You know, lay a little map and communicate.
Oh, nice. Yeah. I like it. Oh, okay. Like so interpretive dance and using sperm as a map.
Yeah.
That's brilliant.
How quickly can males produce these packets of sperm?
Well, given that the females produce 400 eggs a day.
Oh, quite fast.
I'm presuming it's a.
And do you think they have good spatial reasoning to be able to kind of translate the mini map to the big world?
Yeah, I would guess so. Yeah. They do quite a lot of, you know, big swimmers, aren't they? And they can go, yeah. I think they've got this in the bag.
Excellent. Wow. I did not expect such a good answer from the axolotl.
Right.
Okay, Emma, with your leaf cutter ants, how are you going to communicate?
Okay.
Presumably you are in a glass cage because
bars would not hold us.
Hold you.
I kind of, so a little bit like Slow Loris in that it's mostly a hormonal / pheromonal form of communication whereby ants, when they're making their trails, they kind of lay a little trail of pheromones as they go along the foraging route, and they reinforce this by however many ants go down a particular route. If we can't move that far, I think we might have a slight problem. Although they can still send out kind of like stress signals, like chemical signals, that other ants probably would pick up on. I think they do, some of them are airborne, I'm hoping. They also communicate kind of by a series of clicks. And kind of little kind of scratchy noises, so they could kind of do that. I think the best bet is probably using the minimas as messengers. So, you know, I said they had different castes. They have one caste of ant, which is called a minima, which is really like teeny, teeny, tiny. And they normally sit on top of the leaves as they're being collected and kind of direct the flow of traffic / also keep an eye out for predators kind of thing. So I think they could probably find the teeniest, tiniest hole in the smallest bit of the cage, squeeze out of it, squeeze into another cage, and then communicate that way and send messages.
Okay.
Because they're very, very small, and I think they could kind of squish their body through little holes.
Sorry to stop you, Emma. I think you're going to just remain in captivity forever.
Yeah.
I think the winner of this one...
We all know.
It's hard. It is hard because... The ultrasonic communication is cool, but
if it is completely airtight and was sort of soundproofed.
Mm. As somebody who spent a lot of time
in nightclubs
yeah. in the 90s, really? I think communicating via sperm and interpretive dance has got to win.
Yeah.
Highly effective.
Go axolotl.
Well done.
And that's the end of that scenario. Okay, and let's have the last scenario. Scenario, as you may have noticed, I am very worried about the state of the world. So I've decided to build an ark.
To take you and your family to safety.
It's going to happen, guys, you know it.
Global warming, Trump.
Catherine's utopia.
It's going to have to be nuclear proof now as well. But anyway, convince me that your creature should be allowed on my ark.
I actually think the leafcutter ants have a pretty good argument for this, so I'm just going to jump right in there. I know that Catherine's not a fan of ants, but hear me out. So primarily, their primary function in life is to collect leaf and twigs and bits of bark for feeding the fungal colony. They have a symbiotic relationship with a little fungus nest that they feed leaf to, and then they feed the fungus to their babies, and it keeps going. But if you need to build the ark, what better than an entire colony of leaf ants to help you by bringing you twigs and logs and things to make the ark with? And they'll probably be pretty good at finding it out if once it needs repairs.
I've already built it.
I was going to say...
But what if it needs repairs? Like, when it's...
But where are you going to find the leaves and twigs? If you've built an ark, that's probably because there's flooding.
So some trees will have got above the flood level water. Ants are incredibly malleable in their colonies. They can form things like bridges and protective balls and strings of leaf ants. So you could kind of have like a little bridge of leaf ants between the ark and the tree, provided you were kind of at the right angle and close enough for them to bring you back extra twigs and leaves and things to patch up your ark so that you don't sink.
Okay,
so I'm
going to
be your maintenance man.
Your maintenance.
Also, if you're worried about space, to begin with, you only need one. You only need the queen ant, who after she's done her nuptial escape from her own colony, where she then goes and mates with a load of males and gets a load of sperm and goes and sets up her own colony with her own little bag of fungus that she got from her parents. That's all you need to start with. So So we won't take up very much space for quite a long time.
I have to question, before I even bring in my own arguments for why I'm obviously the axolotl is the winner here, does anyone really want ants and fungus on their ark? Because that's what you're offering. We were just discussing.
It's not like harmful fungus. It's like fine. Yeah, you could eat it. So.
But do you want to eat it?
Well, I don't know. If you're craving some mushrooms while you're in the middle of the ocean, then.
Fair. Are there edible mushrooms?
Well, really they're edible for the ants. And also, if you run out of food, you could eat the ants because they're a good source of protein and we can produce more. So we'll provide you with not only a builder, permanent builder maintenance people, you'll also get a permanent supply of food.
But let's say we haven't run out of food. Every time you go to eat, there's going to be a swarm of ants.
Well, you could have like a little ant area and give them like a little bit, like a little payment. Like, you've done this much work here, have this much food.
You've clearly never had ants in your house.
I was going to say.
My ants are very reasonable.
It's a privilege.
And very, very, you know, logistical. They're very kind of group-minded.
If you even barter with them. Very difficult to train.
Yes.
Maybe if I had a lot of ant pheromones, I could leave them in a specific
You could
specific
block character. Them off in a square with pheromones. Like,
it's a lot of caveats, though, isn't it?
It is,
not
yeah.
really.
Let's hear about the axolotl.
Right, so I've got a few arguments here. Firstly, they're critically endangered, and so, you know, we want to preserve...
Oh, boo-hoo, so's everyone.
That was very aggressive.
That was very aggressive.
Anyway, back to the poor little axolotl. So, as they're critically endangered, you want to try and help them out as much as possible.
I am both kind and benevolent.
Unless it's ants.
Let's presume you don't actually care about the axolotl itself. Because of its capacity to regrow certain organs and limbs, it's really, really useful for trying to understand human injuries. So particularly like spinal cord injuries, which is actually one of the reasons they are endangered, because labs have used them so much.
Are you going to set up a lab on this ark?
I'm just saying, well, you never know, because we don't know, like, let's say we've only got four humans and one of them gets a spinal cord.
If you're worried about running out of food, I'm not sure you're going to have the resources to set up a lab on the ark.
This is post-life, you see. Once you're all dead and the ark... Anyway, so they've done lots of studies on it. They've proven that macrophages are really important in the regrowth process, as well as actually finding 10 different microRNAs which are activated post-amputation in these salamanders, as well as other things like zebrafish, which can also regrow. So basically we've learned a lot from them. Useful. As I said earlier, they can lay 400 eggs in one day.
Why would you want that on an ark?
Because all you need is two to come on board, and then when the ark...
And then you have 400 eggs just lying around.
Yeah, but then once the ark has landed,
to be fair,
Emma, as it were...
You used that exact same argument.
My ants are smaller than axolotls.
Although they are neotenous, they can actually metamorphose if required. So let's say it was too dry on the ark, obviously it's not, you don't really want water leaking on, they can actually metamorphose into land salamanders. Plus you could just give them some iodine or the right the thyroxine hormones, which they are unable to produce genetically, causing this neotenous state. They could then metamorphose. So
what's the
versatile.
Point in them being on the ark if they live in water anyway?
Well, that's my point, they don't have to.
No, but if there's water everywhere, then they don't need to be on the ark.
It's a good point. They don't need to be, but the question was, why would Catherine want them to be?
Yeah, I think they're fresh water as well, aren't they? Which eventually it's going to be seas everywhere.
Depends how fresh it is. Unfortunately, it is the high levels of pollution which are causing their demise.
How are you going to supply them with fresh water on the ark? I know that they don't need it. They could become an adult salamander, but to begin with, they're going to need fresh water on the ark.
No, just
which takes up your fresh water drinking supplies.
Shove them some thyroxine hormone, sorted. And also, they can actually spontaneously metamorphose, so put on the land, or on the ark, and whoop!
Alright, I think that was quite an excellent argument. Alright, I had initially thought Slow Loris is going to be kind of cute and furry, make a good pet, but...
True.
Let's hear what else the Slow Loris has to offer my ark.
Well, the Slow Loris has a problem in that it is not very useful. And you can't You can't handle it. That's one of the problems.
That's not what you're supposed to admit about your animal.
I'm just trying Marin to be honest.
Marin seriously doesn't get
this
game.
Guys, I just like all
your,
the animals.
Maybe go for your wild card.
I was thinking about doing this. So I'm going to say a few things about the slow loris, but I'm going to mostly talk about why I need to go for my wild card here. So the slow loris is also critically endangered. Number one, due to the exotic pet trade. And number two, due to habitat destruction, which is very, very sad. And they are adorable. And you can hold them and you can enjoy their company, provided they don't bite you.
And that you don't lick yourself after you've held them.
Yeah, it's a risky business. A risky, risky cute animal. And other than that...
Just what you want in a partner.
Well, it's a pet who gives you an adrenaline rush.
Yeah.
Just a bit of a thrill.
Never mind.
Really.
Or a shark. You want the slow loris. Actually, that's probably why you have so many... Yeah, that's kind of sad.
Surprisingly dangerous. But other than that, they don't do a hell of a lot but sleep. And eat insects. So, although you
I
might want
Catherine
one,
would like that, though.
I think we're gonna go for the wild card. Ah, and it's a crab.
Oh right, okay.
Lovely.
All right.
Crab.
The reason you would want a crab on your ark is because you are on the ark. Yes. So if you need to manipulate your environment, your now aquatic environment, your now highly wet environment. Highly technical term, that highly wet environment. You're going to release your now newly fledged crab colony into the world, and they will help you form the new aquatic ecosystem, which has presumably been destroyed by climate change.
Why would Catherine be interested in forming an aquatic ecosystem?
She's benevolent.
Presumably, I don't want to, like... break the image of me as being a wonderful and benevolent dictator, I would probably eat the crabs.
Yes, see, yes, they have multiple purposes. Delicious, protein, lots of... What?
Unless you're allergic to seafood.
Except for Lottie, who's allergic to seafood.
My worst nightmare.
Yeah, right, Lottie would not survive on this arc. But for Catherine's family, highly nutritious, keep you in all of the proteins and nutrients that one would need if one were trying to avoid scurvy for a long journey on an arc.
That's not... What?
I know,
no.
I know, it's not...
Scurvy's caused by a lack
one.
Of, like,
citrus,
vegetables.
I know. But this one has all of the carotenes and the proteins, you know.
So it's like eating a carrot, basically.
Sure. Let's go with that. Nutrition's not my strong point.
Carotenoids.
Carrot.
Okay.
Carotenoids.
I think I've heard enough.
Oh, dang it, no.
Did you have anything else to say about
closing argument?
If you wanted more food, you could put the crabs into the ocean. They would create a better environment and hopefully spur on some growth, more nutrients in the sea, then more life. Hopefully some of the fish would come back, and then you could have a more sustainable source of food.
Crabs can't live in the middle of the sea, can they? They
live
on the shore.
Yeah, they live
all over. They can float like everywhere.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They swim.
Fascinating.
Highly adaptable arthropods.
Okay, so there's no way I'm taking ants... purposefully, or they'll probably creep in anyway.
I thought I put such a good case for building and maintaining the ark. You know, you'll sink without me.
You're assuming she's built it that needs maintenance, which actually is a bit rude.
Yeah, I'm thinking my ark is going to be significantly more high tech than that, and it is going to have a lab.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But I will also be trying to look after and preserve the axolotls because they're just so weird, and I think that's something that needs
they're
to
so cute
be
and
kept
creepy.
In the world. They are. They're brilliant. So the axolotls are going to win on this occasion. Sorry, crabs.
Sorry, we tried.
I'm imagining that you're going to be in the sea anyway. So
yeah, probably.
Okay. So that's the end of that scenario. Okay, so the winner is Lottie Bingham with the axolotl.
Yay. I can hear the fans from miles around.
Okay, and just as we didn't have them, what were your wild cards? What was yours, Emma?
Mine was the amoeba.
Mm.
I'm glad I didn't use it. It might have been useful for communication, but it would have had to have been dissolved in kind of water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And...
I got the joyous giant African snail.
That's a good
that
one.
That would be pretty good.
Oh, they smell so bad. Have you ever been near them?
No, I can't say I have.
One of my friends, when I was teaching, had them as a class pet.
Oh, jeez.
When we say giant, how big are they?
They're like 2 feet long. They're huge.
Wow, really Emma's big. Holding up her hands to represent sort of like
I might
good
be wrong.
5 inches.
Yeah, they're even longer. They're
wow.
Giant.
Yeah, they're bigger than that. They're about the length of a child's forearm. And you can put them on a child and let the child kind of feel disgusting sliminess.
I am so glad I didn't have to champion that, because that sounds gross.
But they are useful.
Yeah, although she wouldn't have wanted them on the ark, they'd have been too smelly. Yeah,
no, there's true. No way I would have had them on my ark.
People eat them also, actually. I read that recently.
Really?
People,
yeah. How do you cook it?
I have no idea.
Like, go to France, just put it in big fat garlic butter.
Yeah, actually, that's true. Yeah.
Definitely like with other flavours.
Imagine that. Oh, it just sounds so flabby.
But the axolotl is one.
Yeah, all right, so I think we need to say goodbye now. Bye.
Bye.